This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Kicking off hour two of Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network. We're live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Lots to get to this hour in just a little bit. We'll have Chris the Bear Felica of Fox Sports stop by, help us break down the Belmont Stakes coming up this weekend, maybe a little college football with him as well, since we're going to take a look at the latest ESPN FPI rankings that came out a couple days ago, see where those numbers match up or do not match up with the odds board and what that might look like. We'll have best bets at the end of the hour as well, with the NBA Finals Game 1 getting underway tonight with the OKC Thunder and Indiana Pacers. But we're actually going to start here with a little breaking NFL news that just came through. Colts head coach Shane Steichen on the podium with reporters today, letting people be aware that quarterback Anthony Richardson will not be participating in mini camp next week due to a re-aggravation of the same AC joint injury that he had previously suffered. JVT, you are a Colts guy. What did you think when you saw this news?
This was always the risk with Anthony Richardson. This has always been the thing, is can he stay healthy and will he be able to get out there enough to actually try to improve? And it seems that, again, we're at this point. So I've always been very adamant about, because, again, I am a very big fan of like nuance, Stormy. Two things can be true at once type of deal. That Anthony Richardson showed some signs of improvement post-benching, that he still wasn't particularly good, that you don't give up on him because you invested so much in him. And so this was going to be a very important offseason. This is going to be a very important training camp. This is going to be in a very important time where he was going to be competing for this job and trying to show that he can actually do this thing. Last year, it seemed that there were some like maturity issues that was going to be a problem. Now, all of a sudden, it's will he be healthy enough to compete here? So, look, I'll say this. I think that there's we've talked about a lot of different teams in this ilk. There is a reality in which Indianapolis has an awful year. Mm-hmm. And they are terrible at the most important position, and that they're competing for a top pick. And if that's the case, come on down, Arch Manning. Let's go. Gosh. Come on.
Well, even though we haven't seen a full season of him in college yet.
No, and we also don't even know if he's going to come out. As has been pointed out many times,
yes.
There has not been a Manning yet that has come out early.
With this in mind, though, my first thought when you told me this news in the break was the prop that I brought up back last month on Daniel Jones to be the Colts' day one starter, potentially, just citing not only some of the issues they've had previously, but the Colts regime saying that they wanted to bring in competition for him in the first place. Daniel Jones at that time was around plus 210. The latest odds I saw, he was plus 126 with Anthony Richardson minus 166 on DraftKings right now. That prop is off the board. On DraftKings right now, it's off the board. Those numbers that I just cited, the minus 166, are on FanDuel available. Wow. But is this something that you think, like, could this be? He's had injuries in the past. This is a re-aggravation of an injury he has previously had. Is this something you think that could bleed into the time we get to the start of the season?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, we haven't seen anything that would make you think otherwise, that he's just not going to be healthy and that maybe this is going to be worse. One of the Colts reporters worded it as he's going to rejoin the team during training camp. Now, maybe I'm reading too much into semantics, but to me, that tells me not ready for the start of training camp, because I think you would word that differently if that was the case. So there's a reality where he's just not ready to start the training camp. Daniel Jones looks relatively solid in this system, and you go from there. So, yeah, I think that there's definitely reality where he's not their guy week one.
I think kind of a natural follow-up to the Colts and Anthony Richardson injury situation is what we learned a couple days ago about C.J. Stroud and the report that he is not throwing in OTAs due to shoulder soreness himself.
You got there.
D'Amico Ryan said there's no concerns with C.J. It's just general soreness. They're taking extra precaution with him, but he'll be good to go. But if you – like, should you be having shoulder soreness in June before really doing team activities?
No, you shouldn't. And it goes back to, I think it was a Why Not Wednesday quite a few weeks ago. Maybe it was the week that you weren't here. Give me Jacksonville to win the AFC South.
Okay.
They're 3-1 to win this thing. I brought this up in, I think it was the week that you were gone, or one of the days that you were gone. This is a division that is somewhat mispriced. I think the Texans offense, it's not even just the Stroud soreness. I think there's a reality where, again, the offensive line, which was a massive issue last year, they didn't do too much to fix it. You could argue it got worse. It is going to still be that problem. The Colts, I think, are going to be a very poor team. The Titans, we know, are going to be a very poor team. And then your ability, if you're Jacksonville, to take advantage of those four games you get against both Indianapolis and Tennessee, while potentially being on the same level as Houston, I don't think there's much separating them. There's a reality more often than not than Jacksonville wins this division. And by the way, they have the sixth easiest schedule in the National Football League, too. Part of that is playing in the AFC South. But the Texans have a pretty tough schedule, 25th hardest in the NFL by opponent win total. Colts are floating around average. Titans have one of the easier schedules. But again, I don't think they're going to be particularly good. I think all of this put together opens the door for Jacksonville having a better opportunity to win this division than what 3-1 or better would indicate.
This time of year, it is gearing up for the season. With that in mind, we here at VSiN will have our NFL betting guide that is coming out in less than a month now, July 1. That's going to be dropping. Also, if you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, I mean, that's the only way that you really get access to our guides these days. But when you join us on a subscription basis, you're also getting a free pre-order of Josh Applebaum's NFL Sharp Betting Playbook as a part of that. Of course, you get the daily emails. Of course, you get access to everything that we have here at the network, article-wise, best bets, picks, betting splits, all of that. But especially with the NFL season coming up, be prepared. That betting guide is going to come out. And then right after training camp, when we know all of the injuries, when we have more roster things cemented, there will be a refresh of the betting guide as well. So you're getting $41 off the annual subscription right now when you use the promo code book at vsin.com/subscribe. Good updates there. I mean, not good. I'm sorry, as a Colts fan, but interesting in terms of where the numbers are sitting right now. Last couple minutes of the segment. Let's get to the MLB slate. The Braves are up 3-0 right now in the bottom of the third against the Diamondbacks, but a handful of games still to come later on today. One at the end of this hour, Royals-Cardinals, but so many games on deck. Anything that really stood out to you?
Yeah, I did play Royals-Cardinals first three under 1.5 plus 175, so we'll have that, again, instant gratification sweat a little bit later today. Noah Cameron, one of the top prospects for Kansas City, has come in and pitched particularly well. 105 ERA, 378 fielding independent, so even if some regression hits, still an above-average guy in terms of what you're getting with his stuff. Michaelis has been really solid for the St. Louis Cardinals against a Kansas City lineup that still don't really love too much, as we have seen the sample size grow. So I think that this is one where, again, both these pitchers come out in the early going through the first couple of times through the lineup and hold these two teams down, and we get a low scoring to a couple of frames to start the game. Outside of that, I didn't really have much here, but did go first three under 1.5 plus 175 in this game.
I didn't have anything on that game, but I did mention the parlay I put together with OKC Moneyline today. I'm pairing that up with the Tigers and the Yankees, just like two of my favorites essentially today. They're heavy favorites for a reason. With the Tigers specifically, I did also bet them on the run line, minus 120 for them, laying the run and a half. Tigers have taken 2 of 3 in the series, won 8 of their last 10 games, 6 of those wins on the run line. I don't think the White Sox get another one here. Feels like a team-to-team mismatch, and pitching-wise, Casey Mize, 6-1, 2.82 ERA. He got roughed up a little bit in his last start in KC, coincidentally, as we're just talking about the Royals. But that's not the norm. So I think he gets back to form against this White Sox lineup that's second in average in OPS, only to the Rockies, which is not company you want to be in, although they did get the brooms out this weekend. So if we're going to make fun of the Rockies, we got to give them respect as well. And you're due for calling it, even though I bet against him yesterday. Sean Burke is fine, but a bottom eight bullpen behind him and one of the worst lineups in baseball that you're facing. So
like it.
That's the way I play it with Detroit today.
I will say we should probably be making fun of the Marlins more than we talk about the Rockies.
Fair.
Absolutely incredible that we watched that. I will take you to the 12:45 p.m. first pitch. Dylan Cease, Robbie Ray, San Diego, San Francisco. This has been a fun series that we have seen up to this point between these two.
If you had the Padres yesterday.
No, not at all. But it's been these games that we have seen have been very, very good between these two. Not much is separating them. You can see that from the price here. San Francisco opened up like minus 125. We're starting to see that minus 115 pop up. 7.5 the price. I think this is another candidate for going like a first three under 1.5 if you wanted to go there. Robbie Ray continues to perform at a very, very high level. You look at his recent game log, he has not allowed more than an earned run in his last three starts. He has pitched 6 or more innings in each of his last, I think, 8 starts, somewhere in that range. He's been rock solid. And while Dylan Cease, I think you could argue, obviously looking at what we have seen from him, has not been great. He has given up at least 3 earned runs. In fact, he's given up exactly 3 earned runs in each of his last 3 starts, Stormy. But some underlying metrics that would tell you that Cease is pitching better than what his results are giving him. 4.66 ERA, but a 3.29 FIP, 3.19 expected fielding independent. The strikeout numbers are there. The walk numbers are pretty solid. Just getting a little unlucky on balls in play and guys getting stranded. The San Francisco Giants team, I think yesterday was the first time they had scored more than 5 runs in like 18 games or something like that. Their offense really hasn't been particularly great. If there was a lineup that was going to raise Cease's floor, allow him to get back into form and start to show some of the production that is in the underlying metrics, it would be a spot like this here today. So I think that this is, for the game, low-hanging spot if you wanted to go under. But I think, again, a first three under 1.5 would be a way to go here too.
Total for the game sitting 7.5. Also, another, just as we continue to update you on this Braves game, Brandon Pfaadt just getting touched up here. It's 6-0 now in the bottom of the third with a runner on and one out.
Glad the Braves decided to show up.
Finally, it's taken them a while. We talked about them losing again yesterday, but important for them. We leaned Braves and leaned over in this game. Bottom of the third, it's on that trajectory. Total for the game is 9, but I'm not trying to Gucci curse anybody, so let's see if they can keep it up here early. Anything else that you liked on the card last minute before we hit the break?
Nothing that I really liked. I'll say one matchup that I'm interested in. We've seen the market come in a little bit on Zach Eflin and the Baltimore Orioles, your guys. Brian Wu, spots opened up as high as $1.70 favorite. Now he's down to -148. Wu has been pretty good, but I thought that price was a little high, considering what we have seen from Seattle and just in general pricing-wise. Thought that it was a little bit more fair to put this in the range of about -150 where the market's getting to right now. So just going to be curious to see if the market's getting this right, because this is one that I initially had circled to play Baltimore, but the market moved very quickly from the overnight and didn't get in. But I think Baltimore's pretty live here and would agree with the market pushing this thing down.
Okay. Also, just looking through the scores from yesterday, I forgot to bring this up with you. How about the Red Sox? But we were watching some of that game when we were on the air and as we were walking out, like just crazy first and second inning. The Red Sox didn't lead the whole way, and then they not only win, but they cover the run line at the end.
Yeah, the homer off the right around the pesky pole there. Absolutely annoying. Those guys
crazy.
Suck.
Like how
trying to start beef before the match itself or whatever. By the way, Giolito, holy smokes, when it's bad, it's really bad. Soriano got knocked around.
Yeah, not a good time. Got run after 1 2/3 inning, 8 runs on 7 hits. It was ugly. We are going to take a break when we come back. Talking a little June college football with ESPN's FPI rankings come out. Where did those numbers match or not so much with the odds board right now? We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The final jewel of the Triple Crown is here, the Belmont Stakes, and there's no better time to bet the races than right now with First Bet. New users can get a $200 sign-up bonus when they use the promo code VSIN200. Whether you are a seasoned horse player or if you're brand new to the sport, First Bet has all the tools to help elevate your game. You can download the app or go to firstbet.com/VSIN. That's the number one, stbet.com/VSIN. Promo code VSIN200 to cash in that $200 bonus. We're rolling along here on Money Moves, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. We will have Chris the Bear Felica of Fox Sports stopping by in about 15 minutes to help us preview the Belmont Stakes, figure out where we want to put our money in that one. Sovereignty, perhaps. Big favorite. We'll see how it all goes. It'll be fun. But for now, we're actually going to get into a little college football, which maybe the Bear can give us some perspective on as well, because that's his bread and butter sport, too. Of course, Big Noon Kickoff, all the great betting content. He did College Game Day for years. And ESPN, earlier this week, a couple days ago, JVT, put out their latest FPI rankings, Football Power Index. And we know over the years, like, this is far from gospel, but it is very interesting, I think, especially in the landscape of college football when we're trying to keep up with the transfer portal and which teams and units are improving or taking steps back, that you can kind of get a perspective of it. It's also good just for reference, for comparison of what these numbers say versus what the odds say. Yeah. And so I think that'll be a big part of this exercise here. And just looking at the top, I don't think anybody will be particularly surprised to see Texas is up there with all of the expectations they have. Georgia, number two. They're also numbers two and three in terms of the betting favorites this year. Ohio State, who's fourth in ESPN's FPI, is the shortest shot to repeat as national champions, 5-1. But I don't know about you, as I was going through here, just looking at the obvious at the top discrepancy is number three in FPI, Alabama, who's tied for sixth on the odds board at DraftKings, 12-1, 15-1 at BetMGM, 8 on that board. They're third on the SEC odds board, but third in ESPN's overall index here.
Yeah, I think this is – so obviously, outside of all of this, I think what's pretty interesting with these teams at the top is, despite the fact that they – actually, no, I think it's fair to say – they do have questions at quarterback, right? Nothing is really solidified. No. Like, yes, Arch Manning is the starting quarterback for Texas, but we still, in theory, really don't know what Arch Manning is going to be. He should be very good, but that's all expectation. There is a reality. You brought this up earlier when I was hoping that he was going to join the Indianapolis Colts next year. That he's not. That he's not very good. That can happen. And so that's what I think is pretty fascinating about some of these teams at the top. You do have some teams at the bottom with returning, and I say bottom, you know, our top 10 list here, mm-hmm. with some returning production at the most key position and what that's going to look like. But for all of these teams near the top with some interesting quarterback either battles or just questions about what that's going to be for teams inside of the top four, I am very fascinated to see what that is going to look like.
Well, and to go back to Alabama again, too, yep. it was a down year one under Kalen DeBoer. Mm-hmm. Three losses in the regular season. They also lose in the bowl game despite their starters playing and Jalen Milroe playing. Milroe's gone. Ty Simpson is who most people are picking out to be their starting quarterback, but we don't know that for sure either, right? So I think that like lends a little bit of confusion there. So in the FPI, 1, 2, 3 are all SEC. 11 of the top 19 in this metric are. 4, 5, 6, however, go to the Big Ten, which we were discussing a little bit earlier with Ryan Day's comments on the college football playoff. Lots of turnover with the defending national champs, but they do bring back some of their big names. They're the favorite, right? They got Jeremiah Smith. They've got Caleb Downs on defense. Like, they've got some big guys. A lot of these teams we talk about, they don't, like, they reload constantly. Sure. It's not starting over in any, by any means, especially with the payrolls that these teams have. Do you agree with the way that shakes out at 4, 5, and 6?
Yeah, I think for the most part, that is a fair way to put those three teams. I don't think, and you're kind of seeing it too, I think Ohio State deserves to have like a little bit of a line of demarcation between those two, and then there's not much separating Penn State and Oregon. So the way the Big Ten is stacked up, I think that's it. I think when you look at these top 10 teams, the one that I think everybody is always going to be fascinated by is going to be Miami yet again.
Yep.
Because they're a team that, look, Carson Beck at times was terrible last year. All of a sudden, the turnover where he plays really spiked. You have a coach that does give away victories with the way that he manages the game. And I am going to be interested
is their defense going to be better?
Right. It was abysmal last year.
It was so bad.
And again, the decision making down the stretch really killed them. So if you look at how poor this could be for Miami yet again, but expectations are there, that is to me one of the top teams in terms of I cannot wait to see how this works out. Because I actually, when he was at the peak of his powers, I thought Carson Beck was a very good quarterback. I had a bet with humans that this last draft he was going to be a first round pick, mm-hmm. and then he decided to stay because he was absolutely terrible. But I think there's some real upside there that if he hits it, he's going to be again one of the better quarterbacks in the country. But holy smokes, that was weird last year.
Well, and do you think, I'm just looking again at this FPI index because Clemson is a few spots behind them. They're the favorite to win mm-hmm. the ACC, plus 120. Miami's about plus 350. So is that interesting to you that according to this index, Miami is ranked higher than Clemson?
No, yes.
Or you think that's about...
I mean, okay. There's not that much separating them, though, right? Like, so where's Clemson? So Clemson's at
17.3,
and then what's Miami?
And they're when... I mean, they're both 17.3
yeah, right.
in the number, but yeah, 9 compared to 11 with the percentages to make sure. The playoff and other things.
So, yeah, I don't think there's really... I think that's showing it, right? There's not that much separating there for them. I think that when you look at what this Clemson team could be, I mean, I think that there's something there for Clemson being a very good team and getting back to the college football playoff once again, especially if this falls by the wayside. So I am not going to, I think, beat down the door of this being absolutely ridiculous that Miami's there. There's clearly not that much separation between them.
To go back up a little bit, you already said that you don't like Penn State. You're not a believer in them.
They're probably going to win 11 games. That's not like I'm not sitting here saying they're going to win 8. They're going to beat up on the bad teams. You're going to be there. They're going to compete for a Big Ten championship game. I'm just talking big picture. Like, Aller is considered to be one of the top draft prospects for next year, a quarterback, potentially the number one pick if Arch Manning doesn't come out. I think Garrett Nussmeier for LSU could potentially push him for that. But I think that we always have this thing with Penn State, and it's similar to Miami. It's just the opposite, right? Usually their offense is just kind of mundane. Aller and Franklin make odd decisions, and then they lose games that they generally shouldn't or never really reach the expectation. So expanded playoff, we know they're going to get there. They're going to win a ton of games. But in terms of the belief of Penn State actually breaking through and winning a game of meaning, I'm not there.
Plus 757th on the board. Yeah, the James Franklin effect. It is funny, teams like Penn State and Miami, who we're talking about more recently, that they are good coaches in the sense that they put their teams in these positions where they can compete and they can make a playoff and they can't do all these things. But then the in-game decision-making is where they blow it constantly. And James Franklin can't seem to overcome and win the big game. And Mario Cristobal puts these teams in these amazing situations that you do things that, like, percentage-wise feel impossible, yet here we are.
And then he blames his team.
Multiple times.
As opposed to
how about Oregon here? Tons of talent.
Yep.
Dan Lanning is like a recruiting monster, but Dylan Gabriel, obviously drafted to the Browns, he's moving on. what do you think we get from Dante Moore? Because that's going to be critical for this team.
Yeah, I mean, look, I will say, and this didn't look great in the – I believe, if I remember correctly, the game that you worked last year in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
But I think Dan Lanning's actually, you could argue, one of the best head coaches, if not the best head coach in the country. I'm a really big Dan Lanning stan, but I did pull the Homer Simpson in the Bush meme when he was absolutely getting waxed against Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. But I still think that this is something where he's going to have the, like, I love everything he does in terms of what he can be. And with Dante Moore, again, a large unknown. He only had 9 dropbacks last year. At UCLA, we saw a little bit of a larger sample size, and it wasn't really great on 255 dropbacks. Turnover-worthy plays were a really big issue for him, but that's a little bit younger in his career. I trust that Lanning's going to put him in a position that he is going to be able to have success. They're going to run the ball. They're going to build off of that. They're going to be a very good defensive team. And I think that you can trust that Oregon is going to be there yet again at the top, because I just have such a almost blind belief in Dan Lanning.
Okay.
And I think he does deserve it to an extent.
I agree. A very confident guy as well. Notre Dame, independent up there in the top 10, made it to the Natty last year, obviously fell to the Buckeyes. Marcus Freeman kind of building that program up. Expectation is that they're upgrading at quarterback with Riley Leonard in the NFL now. CJ Carr there, strong run game, good defense. Tough schedule, though, early on. Then there's Texas A&M. They lost a lot of big dogs on defense, mm-hmm. but Marcel Reed is back. Tennessee rounds out your top 10 here in the SEC, despite Nico Iomaliava being out there to UCLA. I don't know what you think about Joey Aguilar, but interesting here. Anything else stand out for you as you are going through the FPI as a whole?
No, I think looking at it, I'm always more interested in the years of, I guess you call it like parity and whatnot, but I will take us to one team that many thought were going to be an absolute failure last year, and yet a man saved his job. Florida's 4-1 to make the college football playoff. Everybody and their mother and the DJ Lagway love is out there. Florida's a pretty fascinating team. I think when you look at what they can potentially be, and especially if the upside hits with Lagway, some spots have ranked him as the best quarterback in the SEC. Is that really going to work out? Is that going to be the case? I am fascinated to see what Florida is going to be this coming year. I know they're fringe top 20 here, but come on, dude. They're going to be a pretty interesting group.
Big mover in the FPI, up 27 spots on offense, predicted top 15 offense and defense. Obviously really closed the season well mm-hmm. last year. Billy Napier saves his job, all those things. So, okay.
Something about Billy.
I'm
4-1 to make the playoff.
I made the whole argument a couple weeks ago on South Carolina being a playoff team and Lenora Sellers for Heisman. They're, 15 here mm-hmm. on this too? So I thought that was an interesting one. They're getting a little bit of love as well. Okay, on that note, we're going to take a break. We mentioned Chris Felica. Coming up next with us, we'll break down the Belmont, see if he had any big reaction to the Football Power Index as well. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 158. Rolling along here, Stormy Bonantoni and JVT with you. Excited to welcome in our good friend, Chris the Bear Felica, here on the Progressive Guest Line. Of course, host of the Bear Bets podcast, does great work over at Fox Sports, Big Noon Kickoff, so many things, including horse racing. And we've got the Belmont coming up this weekend, so nobody better to talk to than you, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, up at Saratoga, where it's very warm today. It's in the upper 80s. They're expecting some rain to come in potentially tomorrow to cool things off, and hopefully we'll have a decent track on Saturday by the time 7 o'clock rolls around for Belmont.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Does it bleed into the weekend? Because I feel like we've had so many weather issues in these big racing events this year.
Yeah, we have, and anyone who follows racing the way I do, and Mike Somich as well, it can tell you it's in Saratoga just because of the location and the Adirondacks. We can get a thunderstorm and a deluge of rain at any moment. But it looks like the latest forecast calls for some rain overnight on Friday and into Saturday morning, and then hopefully the shower is going by the wayside. So I would think if the sun comes out, we should have a decent chance at a fast or at least a very good track on Saturday.
All right, Chris, give us an idea of the field. What does the top of the odds board look like for this race?
Well, we don't have a race for a triple crown here, but we have mm-hmm. the first three finishers in the Kentucky Derby running in the Belmont for the first time since 2013. So while we're not getting Sovereignty going for a Triple Crown, you've got him winning the Derby into the Belmont. You've got the Preakness winner, Journalism, who ran second in the Kentucky Derby here. And you've got Baeza, who was third in the Kentucky Derby, and a horse that a lot of people think has a ton of upside going. So it's a pretty deep group of three-year-olds, and you've got the three best ones going on Saturday. I have a hard time seeing someone other than one of those three win, but I think in our dream scenario, we're going to have Journalism and Sovereignty hopefully battling neck and neck down the stretch to see who can win the rubber match.
So what is the way to play this in your mind? Are you doing a trifecta again? Are we boxing anything? What's the angle that you took as far as Saturday goes?
I think the way I'm going to approach it is I don't think it's a race where you're going to make a ton of money. I'm going to have a big win bet on Journalism. I think he's the best horse in the race. I think Sovereignty was kind of pointed towards the Kentucky Derby and ready to peak that day. The fact that Journalism is here and running the way he's looked on the track training, it looks like he is no worse for the wear from the Preakness rather, and in fact looks like he's ready to run a great race. I think the fact that he can lay a little bit closer to a pace scenario where it's not going to be as contested as fast as it was in the Kentucky Derby. You're probably going to have Crudo up front on the lead, Rodriguez, Bob Baffert's horse up on the lead. And I don't think it's going to be a lightning fast pace. And I think Journalism's ability to lay a little bit closer to that pace really is going to allow him to get first jump on Sovereignty, get first jump on Baeza, and ultimately hold those two off this time to win the race. I'm going to bet Journalism to win. I'll probably bet a Journalism Sovereignty exacta. And I think if you want to put a couple of bucks on a trifecta where you put Journalism on top, Sovereignty and Baeza in second, and then maybe in third, you put Hill Road or Rodriguez somewhere along that line to try and get one of those top three choices off the board to maybe add a little bit of value.
This is a pretty short field. Are there spots where there's still some maybe matchups available, Chris? And would you recommend any that are out there or any horses to play against?
I, unfortunately, JVT, have not seen any of those matchups listed yet because I think that's going to be an opportunity to potentially bet some of these horses. Like, I am curious to see if a horse like a Heart of Honor or Uncaged is maybe matched up with Crudo or someone like that, one of the speed horses. Because if you watch the Preakness, Heart of Honor never really ran his race. He was very fractious at the gate. Didn't really ride the race, I think, to win. But he beat a couple of horses home, a couple of horses that wound up on the pace scenario up front that just kind of tired. So if you can maybe, if there is a matchup with Heart of Honor against some of these other shorter price horses like a Crudo or a Rodriguez, maybe you can find a way to get a horse like that at plus money. You just got to beat one of those horses. And I think there's a chance that a horse like that could, even though no chance of winning, but when you're looking at the head-to-head matchups, I think there could be an opportunity. Hill Road is another horse that I would look at, the number one horse, 10-1. I'm curious to see where his head-to-heads are as well, because I certainly think he is the best of the Triple Crown newcomers, and maybe if he's matched up with a horse like Rodriguez as well, that could be an opportunity to play Hill Road in a head-to-head against Rodriguez.
Fox Sports betting analyst Chris the Bear Felica joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Follow up on Rodriguez, who you mentioned a couple times there, scratching the Kentucky Derby due to the crack in the foot. Is that a concern anymore at this point, or what are your thoughts generally on Rodriguez? Why do you like him as a potential contender?
Because I think the fact that he's running, I think that kind of indicates that his foot issues are healed. And with a quarter crack, a lot of times what you can kind of do is, I know it sounds like odd and strange how you treat it, but you can just kind of glue it together, and it helps it heal, which is fine. If Rodriguez would have been the lone speed in this race, if Crudo wouldn't have entered, I think he could have been very dangerous. He beat Baeza soundly out at Santa Anita in a maiden race, and he won the Wood Memorial, basically catching a flyer up front and wired the field there. And Bob Baffert's horses typically know one way to run: go to the front, be the fastest horse in the race, and say, "Come and catch me." And speed is always dangerous, especially at a track like Saratoga, where it tends to favor horses that are either on or close to the lead. Sometimes it's very difficult to make up ground. It's a very deep track. So I think if Bob Baffert has Rodriguez here, I think he's someone who's going to at some point be in front, and maybe he gets Brave on the lead. And if you are looking to upset the apple cart there and beat either the Derby or Preakness champ, Rodriguez is as good as it picks anyone.
All right, Chris, we were dipping our toe earlier in the college football waters, as we're going to be there before we know it. I'll just ask this general question. What is your most outlier opinion on the upcoming college football season when it comes to a team?
I think my outlier opinion is on Clemson. I know a lot of people are super high on Clemson, people loving Clemson over 9.5, thinking Clemson is, or Cade Klubnik is a Heisman front runner per se, has an excellent chance to win the Heisman, and maybe he does. But I think if you look at Clemson, that game, the start of the year against LSU, who is going to be really, really good, that is a game that they have to win. Because last year they wind up winning the ACC, but they got blown out by Georgia. They lost a game to South Carolina, which wasn't good. They lost a game at home to Louisville, which was non-competitive. They kind of stole a game against Pitt that they really shouldn't have won. Like, they really didn't accomplish much during the regular season to make you believe that they were one of the better teams in the country. And now, yeah, you look at the schedule again. They still got South Carolina. They got to go to Louisville. BC is a game on the road. I think that they'll be improved under Bill O'Brien in his second year here. They got, I think, five potential losable games here. And I know a lot of people are high on Clemson, thinking that they're the cream of the crop of the ACC and potential dark horse maybe to win the national title. But I'm not quite there yet with Clemson. I think 9-3 is quite possible for the Tigers, and maybe that'll be good enough to get them back to the playoff. But I don't think they're a national championship contender, and I don't think Klubnik can win the Heisman Trophy without them beating LSU week one.
Yeah, third shot on the board right now to win the Heisman at 11-1. But hey, don't make that South Carolina loss at the end of the season sound like it's a bad loss. South Carolina is about to be the real deal, my friend.
Oh, I am a massive Shane Beamer fan, and I am someone who bought some of that Lenora Sellers stock to be the number one pick in the draft coming up in 2026. So, it'll be interesting to see what South Carolina can do now with Sellers back, hopefully healthy for an entire year. That was really impressive how they did go in there and win, because you look at the box score of that game, and it was kind of like, how the hell did Clemson lose this game?
Yep.
But you give Beamer and give the Gamecocks all the credit in the world for going in there to win, and hopefully with a little bit more expectation to see if Shane and the Gamecocks can kind of live up to him.
Yeah, we shall see. I'm a big Sellers fan myself, too. 18-1.
Were you
right
on the sideline for that game?
For him. No, I wasn't. But it was a fun one to watch from home, that's for sure. Always appreciate the time. Cannot wait for Big Noon Kickoff. Really excited for this weekend, and we'll be checking in with you a bunch, Bear. And welcome back to the country, by the way, after your long trip.
And the same to you as well. We were
crossing
paths in Europe at the same time in different countries all over the place. So, it was fun. So, yeah, enjoy the Cup, enjoy the NBA Finals, JVT, and Stormy, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks,
buddy. Glad to have you back. And, yes, I did, by the way, take Bear up on some of his food recommendations when I was out there in Florence. The man is very well-traveled, and I'm very appreciative because I got a very, very good meal in Florence, compliments of Chris the Bear Felica. On that note, we're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're wrapping things up on this Thursday edition of Money Moves. Our best bets for tonight as the NBA Finals, as Bear referenced, gets underway tonight with Game 1. OKC taking on the Pacers, Game 1 tonight. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Oilers held home ice in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final last night. Will the Oklahoma City Thunder do the same at home as a big favorite tonight as Game 1 of the NBA Finals gets set underway in OKC? JVT, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We're going to break down our final thoughts ahead of Game 1 of the series. We also have our best bets for the day presented by G-Bank coming up in a moment. But before we get to that, all week we've been talking about the series, different ways, different angles that we want to play it in addition to just Game 1. So you want to get out your final thoughts on the series here real quickly, the profile of bets that you have laid out?
Oh, sure. Okay, so we're going to do the whole thing. Gotcha. All right.
Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
I feel like that's a good way to lay that out.
So I have a lot in terms of what I have bet here in this series. I did add a couple of late ones, so I hope Ortega is not mad at me for doing so. All right, so I think the series ends in five. So we have series exact games in five at plus 230. Exact result, we played both of them. Thunder, 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 Pacers, Thunder. So games one through three, game four, Pacers, game five, Thunder at plus 880. Same thing except just game three for the Pacers, game four or five, Thunder. That's a plus 710. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to lead the series in assists at 5-1. Jalen Williams to lead the series in assists at 66-1. As you told me, I guess I have some closing line value here on those two things potentially. Chet Holmgren to average 20-plus points per game in the series at 5-1. The long shot on Holmgren, most points in the series at 150-1. And then Pascal Siakam over 19.5 points per game for the series at minus 115.
Okay, and you said that SGA assists is probably your favorite of the bunch to this point. And, yeah, the closing line value is there at DraftKings right now. Tyrese Halliburton went from minus 900 to minus 400. I'm looking at FanDuel right now. He's minus 360.
That's much more reasonable.
Yes. But so you get your 5-1 on that prop, and the best that I am seeing right now is plus 250 for SGA, which I think even at that price I still might buy in just because if I think he can win it, why not?
Yeah, that is more reasonable, but you're right. I think there's a better shot for Shai to actually get this thing in terms of assists. They're so good on defense. Mm-hmm. The opportunities, I think, are going to be few and far between for Tyrese Halliburton to get there. I think you can even make the argument that it lends itself to more scoring for Halliburton because I think he's just going to have to do that because the assist opportunities aren't going to be there. So we'll see if that's the case, but just pricing that as high as it was, minus 900,
I just think
is too much, especially when you have two skilled passers in terms of pure assist rate on the floor at the same time, and Jalen Williams and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I do love also that you added the long shot on Holmgren for most points in the series. I don't have this in my profile, but I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you on SGA, and I'm going to throw in a Jalen Williams to have the most point. Just kind of my shot, second best scorer on the team that I think is going to win. His three-point shooting percentage has obviously had an uptick the last series after we were talking about kind of what's going on with him. So that's the way I think I'm going to do that. And my only other series play that I have that I do really like, and I've talked about a handful of times this week, is the Thunder to go undefeated at home. It's minus 120. They have had their struggles on the road. We've talked about the lack of ability to cover, and the way that they've played on the road versus home is extremely different, but dominant on their home court this postseason. I've cited the stat a handful of times, but the best playoff points per game differential at home of any team entering the finals in NBA history. It's nearly 25 points per game. They lost just one game in their home building. It was by two in a game that they led by 11 with less than 5 minutes to go. So I feel like they'll be in position. They've had a ton of success against the Eastern Conference. I like them to go undefeated at home, and I like them to cover the 9 today. And that was available for a long time. So yeah. I don't think that that's crazy to have that on my thing. We're seeing still some 9.5s there, and I would feel much more comfortable laying 9.5 than the 10, because you don't want to be in a position where you have to get a push after you're laying a number. But I'm back in OKC to get it done and continue their home court dominance.
I think it's going to happen.
Okay.
We're not going on a limb, though.
Any hot takes saying that OKC is going to win and win at home.
Part of me does hope that I'm wrong or you're wrong to an extent, because you do hope that this is going to be a somewhat entertaining series. And then we don't have to do the whole TV ratings and BS conversations as usual.
Well, especially after the way that game one went for the Stanley Cup final. Like, I am particularly excited for that to be a long series. I would like to have two long series. Mm-hmm. If we could get six games out of the series, I know that you wouldn't like that because you bet the gentleman sweep.
Yeah, that would be bad.
But I think that it would be entertaining for the Pacers to make a push and steal a game or two.
Let me ask you a question. What is a gentleman's sweep?
It's when you win in five games, correct?
Incorrect. Is it stand on business. It is up 3-0, lose game four, win game five.
I think, yeah, okay.
That is a gentleman's sweep. I will not have this any other way.
Okay.
It's not any 5-1 score.
I agree with that, but
a
I just
4-1 score.
I just think – Doesn't everybody still call it that, though, when it's in five?
Yeah, and they're wrong.
Okay.
I need this message out there. I talked about this with Scott Seidenberg yesterday. I will preach the word. It is not a gentleman's sweep unless a team goes up 3-0, allows, right, as a gentleman. You know what? I'm not going to embarrass
give you
on your home court.
Yes.
We're not going to sweep
here. We're not going to do our trophy ceremony on your home court.
We're going to go back home and do this. So you take this last game, and we'll go back home.
Okay, so I learned.
A distinguished gentleman does.
I learned to confirm my vocabulary. That's right. Good. And then while we're at it, I will also say, because we saw this on the broadcast yesterday in the NHL, mm-hmm. We need to stop calling odds on favorites numbers that are not odds on favorites. and it really, really bothers me. Plus 700 is not an odds-on favorite just because they are the favorite in the market.
Yeah,
okay?
Correct.
Just throwing that out.
Yeah, I was doing a hit the other day, and somebody brought that up. I was like, well, if I'm going to nitpick, it's not odds-on. But, yes, they are the favorite to do that.
Bless you. Getting it out there. Time for our best bets of the day, presented by GBank, the official bank of VSIN. And, yes, I will. My OKC bet is one of the day. I am also pairing that on the money line with my favorites in Major League Baseball today, the Tigers and the Yankees. Put them all together, plus 148. And I am also diving deep on the Tigers' run line today against the White Sox, minus 120, that price, which is actually, like, the market has gone the other way a little bit. This was minus 135 earlier this morning, minus 120 now that's available. I very much so feel like this is a mismatch, and the Tigers get it done here. Anything that you have today outside of your over, the 229.5?
No. Okay, yes. Sorry, I got confused there for a second. I was like, that's a high total for a baseball game.
Hey.
Yes, so I got a couple of things. First off, we're sweating out this right now.
Have an over in this game that's playing right now. We need one more run.
A gift and a curse. Jonathan India on my fantasy baseball team hits a solo shot. I have under 1.5 runs in this Royals and Cardinals game, but luckily it was just that, a solo shot. So under 1.5 first three at plus 175 there. And then also did go to that San Diego-San Francisco matchup, did the under 1.5 plus 135 for San Diego and San Francisco in the matchup between Dylan Cease and Robbie Ray. Okay. Those are the only two plays. And then, as you mentioned, over 229.5 tonight between Indiana and Oklahoma City. I'd venture a guess that that's going to pop up by the time we get to game time. So, and you might even get a better number. So just sit back and wait. I was pretty adamant that we were going to get to some buyback here, and we are starting to see that.
So you think that this could go back down to the 229.5?
Yeah,
230 is the number.
Yeah, you're
prevailing
at 230.
Right now.
Some spots are shaded to the under on the 230.
Okay.
I still think 230 is playable as well, but you just sit back and wait and see where the market's going to go. It's going to be all over the place.
Best bets presented by GBank, the official bank of VSIN, and you got to check this out. The trifecta we've got going on, combining stuff from GBank, First Bet, and VSIN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa signature card in your first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet. That will trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cash back rewards on your GBank Visa signature card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSIN completes the trifecta with a free VSIN Pro subscription through October 31st, a $200 value. That's your $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSIN. Head over to VSIN.com/GBank for more information. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This is a one-time promotion limited to customers opening a new account in response to the offer. Will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply.
So I'm going to do some post-show production forward in front of the people. Tomorrow, big surprise for you guys. I will, and we did this last year on primetime, so I think that you should put something together like this for the Stanley Cup final. I will be, because every good idea is stolen. We did a finals MVP ladder after every game. So we can take a look at that and see, all right, cool, like statistical performances, where a guy's at, adjusted finals MVP odds.
Okay.
So I will have my top five finals MVP ladder after game one. We'll do it after every single game in the series.
Okay, so should I do that then for the Stanley Cup final?
For the
Conn
Smythe.
And we can just put that back to back? Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to kind of, now for the NBA finals, it's tough because it is just a series, right? So it's going to be pretty volatile. It's always good to have that conversation about where guys stand and where the value is. You know, we did a really good job in doing that, and it got us last year Jalen Brown to win Eastern Conference Finals MVP, whichever one he won. And I think it's the same thing here. I think he won Eastern Conference Finals MVP. My brain is mush at this point right now. But it's a good exercise to kind of see where guys stack up and find out where you could find some value. If Jalen Williams has a really big game in game one, and it's also a short series, and they blow him out, who knows? Maybe you can get something.
What's he, 30-1 right now?
Something like
in that.
Yeah.
SGA is just so juiced in everything right now. Connor McDavid, by the way, as far as the Conn Smythe odds go, the plus money is gone on him now after a two-point night. And, I mean, big assists for him in game one as well. Minus 150, Sergei Bobrovsky, 4-1, your shortest shot for the Florida Panthers.
The most thrilling overtime period I've ever seen in my life.
Stop.
Loved the icing.
It was just like...
Even you can admit the icing.
It was so awesome the way that I looked at my phone 30 seconds after I screamed at my television, can we stop icing the puck?
Yeah.
So, yes, you're not alone in that thought process at all.
The grumpy hockey fans were mad at me.
And for anyone that's getting in JVT's mentions for that, it's, come on. You're ridiculous. On that note,
go watch basketball.
I was like, that series doesn't start till tomorrow. I will.
Let's have a little fun, okay? Good luck with your bets, everybody, today. There will be more NBA coverage coming up next, of course, as Prop Points with Nick Whalen and Jeff Erickson gets underway. Alex Barutha, a guest with his best bets for the NBA Finals. Plus, of course, still to come today, Make It Rain with Adam Schein. Follow the Money. Everybody getting you set for game one of the NBA Finals tonight. Have a great day.